This is Law Bites, a podcast with Michael Geist.
Canadians aren't buying it.
On Parliament Hill, criticism the Liberal government isn't protecting customers who feel misled by their telco provider.
And this is another ploy to get ripped off by Rogers, who just gouged out record profits.
He's talking about a price hike people like Kathy Cooper aren't too happy about. She's a Rogers customer who expected a guaranteed price when she signed a two-year contract a few months ago, but then learned the telco giant was raising the price of every TV box but one by $7 a month.
Consumer frustration with just about everything associated with Canadian communication services is by now pretty well known. The list of concerns is long. High prices, contracts that lock in consumers but not the providers, gaming prices to make comparison shopping difficult, and confusing consumer codes are among the myriad of issues that invariably have come up year after year. As politicians have begun to take notice, the CRTC has suddenly become more active, with several consultations and new consumer-focused initiatives. My colleague Marina Pavlovich, a law professor at the University of Ottawa, has been at the forefront of consumer rights law and communication services for many years. She joins me on the podcast to talk about the ongoing consumer challenges and the latest developments at the CRTC. Marina, welcome back to the podcast.
Thanks for having me back, Michael.
Yeah, no, it's great to have you back. You know, you've been at the heart of an issue that's really, in some ways, been the source of much angst, I think, for much of the last couple of decades, which, of course, is consumer pricing and telecom services. The government and the CRTC have responded with what I'd like to think of the three C's: codes, cajoling, and maybe corporate criticism. But there's a fourth C. Not everyone's convinced, at least not convinced that it's working. In fact, some of the recent stories that we've seen in Canadian media have sparked first a consumer backlash, which then leads to a political backlash, and finally a bit of a regulator response, and that has to do with some consumer contracting issues. So why don't we start with a bit of context? What have we seen in the media around some of the telecom consumer contracts, or more broadly, consumer contracts with communication services, and especially around the issue of unilateral changes that some of the companies seem to reserve the right to do?
Right. So in the last month, I think, CBC Go Public, which usually has stories about people who feel that they have been unfairly treated, initially reported about a consumer who had a contract for internet and TV services with Rogers, and that their bill suddenly skyrocketed because the price of set-top boxes for TV went up. And that particular person had several boxes because they had an extended family living with them. And so the consumer was very upset because the price went during the duration of the contract, and the premise is that when you enter into a limited term contract that you believe that the prices are not going to go up. And the consumer was very surprised that the providers are actually allowed to do that. And so after that first story was reported, Go Public received literally hundreds and hundreds of other emails from people with not necessarily the exact same situation. So it may not have been the set-top box, but there were other reasons why their either internet or TV contract prices actually went up. And so it pains me to say this, but at this particular point, the providers are not doing anything that they're not allowed to do. And I think that's the that's the core source of the angst that people are having, that all of these protections, and I think we're going to talk about them in a little bit, that are put in place to supposedly protect consumers are not actually achieving that protection, and that people feel very vulnerable, and that the price that they budgeted for all of a sudden is not necessarily the price that's actually going to stay for the duration of the contract.
Okay, no, thanks. I didn't write into them, but I can relate. I also, contract comes up after a year or two, I call in, I figure I'm locked into whatever the deal happens to be, and it would certainly come as a surprise to see the prices go up. The CRTC's emphasized codes of practice and the like. What would apply here? And you've hinted at it already, but how effective have these codes been, especially in this kind of context?
So CRTC has three, actually four, but three are relevant in this case, codes of conduct. It has wireless code, internet service providers code, and TV service providers codes. And so these codes are not identical, and they're historically made at different points in time in order to address some of the issues that arose in the marketplace. And each of them regulates a specific service. So I think what the first source of frustration for consumers is that most people have a bundled service. And so you have a service for a number of different things. You have a contract for a number of different things, but each of those things in the bundle is actually governed by a different code, and they don't necessarily have the same level of protection. So the wireless code is considered to be the gold standard within the Canadian context. It still isn't, but it's better than nothing. And the wireless code has a provision that says that the providers cannot change the term, the key terms of the contract during the duration of the contract. And the code defines what the key terms are. And so a lot of people interpret that the wireless code says, well, you can't actually change it at all, but it doesn't. It says you cannot, providers cannot change the key terms without the consumer's explicit consent. And it also says consumers can reject, but I don't think anybody knows that you can reject the change when it comes your way. Internet code has a similar structure. So again, no changes to the key terms unless the consumer agrees. Consumer can also reject. And then the terms that are not the key terms, and I think that's where a lot of these frustrations actually come up, can be changed with a 30-day notice. And then TV providers code basically has no protections. It just says the providers needs to give consumers a 30-day notice. And the other thing that I just wanted to flag, so not only that the codes are not uniform, and they came in particular sort of points in time, and internet code is the one that came last as somewhat lackluster response to the misleading and aggressive sale practices report that the CRTC issued, which was, again, propelled by some of these public, particularly CBC Go Public's actually reporting a few years ago. And when the internet code was brought in, the structure of the proceeding was very quick and the timing was very quick, and public interest groups actually boycotted the hearing. So when the code was brought in, there weren't really a lot of diverse voices that would point to some of these issues that could arise. And I think some of that impacted the way that the protections were structured. So going back to sort of short answer, and there is really no short answer, is like codes are in place. They seemingly provide some protection against unilateral changes, but they actually don't do that at 100%, right? And so a lot of people don't know that they can actually reject the change. And again, the changes to not the terms that are not the key terms are permissible with a 30-day notice. And I think that's, again, that's the core of the concerns that are popping up.
Okay, that's a really good breakdown. I just actually want to follow up for my own edification. So if you have a bundled service that cuts across all three of these different codes, is it that the particular code applies to the particular service? But yes. Then what happens on, are there elements that are kind of uniform across the board that's like just general contracting with Rogers or whoever the service happens to be? So which code applies to that if you've got three different codes without necessarily the same provisions?
So each code applies to the specific service that you have. And then issues that are not addressed by the codes are governed by the contract. And I think that's the second root cause, because the contracts are very unilateral in favor of the providers. And the contracts themselves also give providers the right to unilaterally change the terms. So it's kind of a double whammy where the codes are like, okay, we are giving you the protection, but it's actually not the protection, because if you agree to it, they can change the terms. And then and whatever is not covered by the codes is covered by the contract. And the contract also says, well, we can change the terms whenever we want. And your continued use of service is actually your agreement to the changes, right?
Okay. I mean, just so not consumer friendly. It's frankly, it's striking just to hear what a mess it is, especially for the average consumer, to try to sort through all of that. Now, you mentioned, we talked about sort of some of the complexity of the codes, and then you flip to, but then there's the contract side. Is there something that's particularly unique or complex about telecom contracts, or are these kinds of issues just consumer issues? Are consumers are often at a disadvantage when contracting with larger players, and this is just a sort of a paradigm example of that?
I think it's both. I think these are typical issues that you would see in any consumer contract. And I would wager pretty much anything to say you're unlikely to find a single consumer contract that says we will not make changes unilaterally, right? Like it is just a provision that is commonly used. And providers of whichever services, not just telecom, are managing their risk. And I think for them, that's a risk management tool, except that it heavily disadvantages consumers. The special nature of telecom contracts, I think, is first, internet and cell phones are people's lifelines to the rest of their lives. And you can't actually have access to other services if you don't have these. So that makes them particularly special and particularly valuable for people. So it's very difficult then to say, okay, I'm not going to have a cell phone because I can't afford one. And then the second one is the price structure of each service. And then when they're in a bundle, that makes it even more complicated, right? Because the structure isn't like when you're purchasing a single thing, a subscription to something, and it's X amount of dollars per month. It's, it's a subscription to the service, but then you may have add-ons and there may be discounts that are calculated and there may be multiple components to the price structure. And then you multiply that with three different services and it's an absolute nightmare. So I think they're paradigmatic of the entire sort of consumer landscape, but the particular pricing structure and bundling makes them even more complicated and complex than the rest of the contracts.
Okay, that's interesting. Now we have seen some movement from the CRTC and some comments from the CCTS. Why don't we unpack this alphabet soup? Starting with the CCTS, which I don't know is, even though it's been around for quite some time, isn't still, I don't think, all that well known. So what is it? What does it do? And if you want to get into sort of some of their statement in terms of responding to some of the statements, whether or not they've said anything new at all.
CCTS is the Commission for Complaints for Telecom Television Services. It is a mouthful in alphabet soup. In short, it's an ombuds organization to resolve consumer complaints with service providers. It has been in existence for almost two decades, and it is not widely known, unfortunately. And for things, for sort of garden variety consumer complaints, they're an excellent source for people who can't resolve individual complaints with their service providers. But the way it's structured and the way its mandate is structured, it doesn't actually allow them to resolve systemic issues. So like any sort of adjudicative body, they are a reactive institution. So a consumer has to bring a complaint to CCTS. And in order for a consumer to bring a complaint to CCTS, they first have to attempt to resolve it with the provider. And then CCTS's job, again, in the terms of service that they have, is to assess whether the provider has breached one of the codes or whether the provider has done something that's outside of the provider's terms of service of the contract. And so, and we just talked about it, how neither of those provides actually good protections for consumers. Again, codes provide some protections, but they're not really great. And the terms of service are clearly drafted in unilateral favor of service providers. So, and CCTS cannot take, a class type of dispute where there are like, hundreds or thousands of people with the same problem. It has to be an individualized component. So for, again, garden variety complaint that you have with a provider, they're a really great resource, but they're not in a position to actually systemically resolve issues that are coming up. So I think their statement was good to remind people that they exist and that, people should actually, if they are not able to resolve complaints with their providers, that they should go to CCTS. CCTS does issue annual reports and it's interesting to see some of the trends. But I think what we're missing is a feedback loop between when CCTS identifies something as a systemic problem and CRTC reacting to that and actually fixing it.
Okay, interesting. So let's turn then to the CRTC, but you're right, those annual reports, at a minimum, I think there was a stretch there where the telecom companies seemed particularly sensitive to those reports and whether or not they were where they ranked in terms of the number of consumer complaints and things like that. So at least it has some effect, but of course we see the practices and it's somewhat more limited. In theory, the CRTC would have, I think, a bit more power. Now, they've also put out a release, presumably responding to some of the political pressure on the issue. What did they say that they're going to do about this issue?
So I think it was a very good step. The CRTC actually responded that quickly, because last time in 2017, 2018, when CBC Go Public reported for 6 months, it took CRTC much longer to actually respond. And it actually took an ordering council to require them to hold the hearing. So on the positive side, I think the fact that they responded within less than 10 days from the initial report was really good, which means these things are on their radar. They did two things. First is they sent a letter to the providers to remind them that the codes exist and that the codes require that the pricing is communicated to consumers clearly. Which is okay. You have to provide the clear breakdown of the price, but that still doesn't mean you cannot change the price, right? And then in the second, which was a press release really to the public, they said that they're concerned about the trend and that they intend to hold hearings in the near future about some of these issues to resolve them, and that they're also considering looking at the three codes of conduct together, and I'm assuming perhaps unifying the protection so that once you have a bundled service, actually each service is covered with you have the same rights for each service rather than sort of discrete rights with different services. So I think it's a positive step. It was done very quickly, but what's going to come out of it still remains to be seen.
Sure. Why don't we drill down a little bit more on that, so we may get some kind of new hearings that they're opening the issue up. You just suggested one of the possibilities. Maybe expand a little bit. What else? What do you think this might look like? And I guess, what do you think could be done to try to improve the situation when it comes to some of these issues?
So I think the benefit of CRTC doing this is that everybody who is peeved with their contract has an opportunity to actually give their voice provide their voice in this hearing. And I think it's important for individual people to participate and express concern about things that bother them, because the commission really needs to make the decision on the record, and having many voices and lived experiences on the record is very good. I think the first step would be unify the codes and have a single code that covers everything. Services are admittedly different, and there may be differences, like minute differences in different services that, you can't have like 100% identical protections. But I think for things that really bother people, which is pricing and unilateral changes of contracts, that can be unified. So I think there are ways to structurally construct it that there are protections that are provided across the board. And then if one service is slightly different, that sort of has a different exception. So I think that would be the first step, but I think that's not enough. I think some of the protections in the codes need to change and need to be bolstered. And so I think it is very clear from what we're hearing that people don't like unilateral price changes. And so what was put in the wireless code and the internet code, that providers cannot change prices unless people agree and they can reject them, that's not working. And so I think there has to be a stronger protection. And I also think within the powers that the CRTC has for these types of contracts, that they could actually put more protections to regulate the content of the contracts beyond what they have done so far. So just beyond the codes, because again, those are things that really jar people. And I think predictability is incredibly important. And we're not seeing a lot of predictability there.
Yeah. No, I mean, it does strike me that, you sign on to a 2-year contract and the provider makes it very clear that you are locked in for those 2 years, and there's no get out of jail card there other than significant penalties. But it feels pretty one way if at the same time, the same provider is able to make changes to that same contract. So they impose certain conditions on consumer that they're not at the same time willing to live with. I'm curious, there's been frustration at times with the CRTC on other issues. I'm thinking of C11. as a good example, where there were consumer public interest issues, and there wasn't a sense that they played a significant role in some of that CRTC decision-making process. So they said, yes, we want to hear from people, but at the end of the day, they don't really cite them. And it's viewed primarily as an industry-type issue. Is this different? Is this the sort of thing that, as they move into the consumer side, the CRTC has a bit of a different vision about its role and about the kind of evidence that it needs to be able to make decisions?
I think it's different because it directly impacts consumers. I think C11 things indirectly impacted consumers. Because it was, as you said, it was more really of an industry issue, and consumers were really consumers of services, and as such were impacted sort of laterally. Here they're directly impacted. And it is all about the relationship between the providers and consumers. And so I think, again, to CRTC's credit, over the last 10 or so years, the codes have actually been a really good, they've been, you know, that's progress, because before the codes, we didn't have anything, and it was actually much more unpredictable. And so particularly wireless code has limited, you know, the overage fees, the roaming fees, even the early cancellation fees, there's a cap on them. So they can't really exponentially grow. There's still a problem, and I think a lot of people are surprised that they're there, but at least they're capped. So I think there has been a lot of goodwill by the CRTC, like in sort of by putting these codes in place, that it has earned considerable goodwill with consumers. And I think the marketplace looks different than it did 10 years ago, or how many years ago when we put the wireless code in place. And I think it's just the time for a sort of reset and update. And until proven otherwise, I am hopeful that this time around, things are going to be different than they were during the internet code.
Okay, so as if all this discussion around codes and efforts to try to ensure that they're effective weren't enough, the CRTC's now also launching a proceeding that deals with a number of other consumer-related issues. And in fact, they specifically note that they've put different ways to protect Canadians in the wireless code and the internet code. And they view this public proceeding, as they say, another step in giving Canadians more control over the services they receive. Can you unpack a bit what the CRTC is doing with this latest proceeding?
It's actually three proceedings, which is interesting. So the driver for these proceedings is actually the Budget Implementation Act that put certain changes to the Telecommunications Act, which require that consumers have better protections. And so there are three proceedings that are separate but interrelated. They're based on the wireless code, so they cover cell services and the internet code, people's access to the internet, but they do not cover the TV code, and I'll return to that in a second. Proceeding 293 is supposed to enhance customers' notification when their plans are about to expire. So what kind of information people should get if their plans are expiring, so that they would know actually how to, you know, figure out what they're going to do next. 294 is removing barriers to switching plans. So looking into what kind of fees are imposed to consumers that would prevent them actually from switching to a different telecommunications provider. And so while the early cancellation fees are in the wireless code and they're capped, I think this goes beyond and looks into like connection fees and a number of other sort of tangential fees that may prevent people from actually going from provider to provider, because when you know, cumulatively, they may actually add up to a lot and not necessarily be worth it. And then the third one, 295, is about self-serving tools that should be available for consumers by telecommunications providers to allow them to actually better choose the plans that work for them. And so these are all good measures to have in place. And I think they give, or are supposed to give at least, consumers more autonomy in deciding what plans they're going to have. But I don't necessarily think that they go to the core of the issues that we've discussed.
So we've got these three proceedings that will build on some of the other work that's taking place. But one of the things that I think makes this note, at least the notice for these proceedings, quite notable, so to speak, is that there is a dissenting opinion, which you rarely see. It comes from Bram Abramson, a commissioner on the CRTC, who was a former guest on this podcast in his prior life before he became a CRTC commissioner. Can you talk a little bit about what Bram has focused on and highlighted and what his concerns are with respect to where things are moving in this area?
And as you mentioned, I think it's notable to say that the dissenting opinion didn't come in a decision. It actually came in a notice before the commission is even looking into the issue. So he doesn't take issue with what the commission is supposed to regulate and what are these issues. Again, part of it comes from the legislation, so the commission really doesn't have a choice. He takes issue in the prescription, in the way that the commission wants to regulate these things. And so I'll read a paragraph which I think perfectly encapsulates his concern, and we're going to talk about how he suggests actually that these things should be resolved. So he says, service providers hold information about the plans that they offer. We and Parliament want service providers to assist subscribers in identifying plans relevant to them. Specifying exactly what a service provider notice about such plans might look like is straightforward, but runs the risk of being static, brittle, and overly prescriptive and gameable. So the notice basically says, here is the information that we will require providers to make available to consumers. So that's the straightforward part. And it is really just going to be available, again, in the contract itself. And what Commissioner Abramson is saying, that that's actually not enough, and that's the gameable part, right? Where, first of all, the onus is still on individual consumer to go and comparison shop, which is very difficult. And the whole point is to make the information readily available so that the third parties can emerge who could actually compare and do the job for consumers. And so if it's provided in a machine readable format, which is basically just plain text that can be analyzed, then an intermediary service can provide a list of, okay, if you're looking for plan A, here are the choices between a number of different providers. Right now, that really doesn't exist. And the concern that Commissioner Abramson has for this particular hearing, or actually all three of them, is that that information is going to continue to be unavailable to the broader public, and that the onus is going to be still on individual consumers, which I think is too big an onus.
Okay. So, you know, as we wait for this sort of world to emerge, the prospect of machine readable data so that third parties can begin to do these apples to apples comparisons, essentially do the work on behalf of consumers. Why don't we wrap with this? The question that often comes up in the context of people struggling to deal with high prices and not necessarily, as we're just discussing, having the kind of data they need. What would you be doing, or what do you advise consumers to do in terms of some of the high costs they're facing for communication services?
On an individual level, I think it would be really good for people to be aware which part of the price structure is that key term that cannot be changed, and which part of the price structure of their contract is possibly subject to change by the providers. So at least that they're aware what are the things that can be changed. If they experience changes, again, if it's for internet services and cell phone services within the duration of their contract, they can actually reject them, right? Because the code actually says the consumer can reject it. And if that rejection is not well received, then I would suggest that people go to CCTS. For services that are not key terms and there are changes, again, within the 30-day notice, there is really no option other than you either accept them or you try to find a different contract, which is a problem. And then, which we don't have the mechanism to solve at this point, right? And I think for any kind of problem that they have with the providers, if they can't resolve it, I would encourage them to go to CCTS. Again, CCTS, while it has limited powers, I think it still has this information gathering ability. And so having a record of certain trends would help in any of the future hearings and proceedings that the CRTC may hold.
Okay. All right. Well, you've been at it for so long. The fact that you've still got a bit of optimism here, both about the potential for change and identifying some potential solutions that people can turn to speaks nicely about that things have improved, and I think is valuable to know that advocacy can make a difference. So thanks for all the work that you've done over many years to try to make things better for consumers, and thanks for joining me on the podcast to talk about it.
Thanks for having me.
That's the Law Bites podcast for this week. If you have comments, suggestions, or other feedback, write to lawbites@pobox.com. That's LAWBYTES at pobox.com. Follow the podcast on Twitter at lawbitespod or Michael Geist at mgeist. You can download the latest episodes from my website at michaelgeist.ca or subscribe via RSS at Apple Podcast, Google, or Spotify. The Law Bites podcast is produced by Gerardo LeBron LeBoy. Music by the LeBoy brothers, Gerardo and Jose LeBron LeBoy. Credit information for the clips featured in this podcast can be found in the show notes for this episode at michaelgeist.ca. I'm Michael Geist. Thanks for listening, and see you next time.